But today is VE Day. The war is
the
over.
The crowned queen waves from the balcony.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has landed.
Tearing down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Bailey Gifford. Capital at risk.
Hello and welcome to our Citywire studios in London. I am Noor Azhar. Joining me today, president of crypto firm 21 Shares, Duncan Moyer. Duncan, welcome to Citywire.
Thank you for having me, Noor.
In today's podcast, we're diving into a fascinating intersection of worlds that establish the space of traditional finance and the dynamic frontier of digital assets. Now, Duncan, you have a unique vantage point, having not only spent 15 years navigating the complexities of a major traditional asset manager, but you have now stepped into a leadership role at the forefront of crypto investments. So if we start there, you recently took the role of president at 21 Shares. What does that mean? What do you actually do?
Good question. It's not in the title, is it? So I guess the best way to think about my role at 21 Shares is being responsible for the go-to-market in the company. So anything from research, running the research function, to marketing and product as well, everything that's outward facing would be kind of coming under me. So think about it, the growth of the business.
Yeah. Now, prior to joining 21 Shares, you were a senior investment manager at Aberdeen for over 15 years, and you've led the firm's digital asset business. You were responsible for product, technology, and strategic investment in that area. Late last year, alongside a couple of your colleagues, including Russell Barlow, who is now the CEO of 21 Shares, you all migrated. Was there a specific frustration or a perceived ceiling within the traditional asset management space that made the allure to move to a digital asset space so strong for you?
You know, I wouldn't call it a ceiling or a frustration. I mean, I think there's a huge amount that can be done within traditional asset management as it relates to blockchain and digital assets. For sure, areas like tokenization are still very hot. And I think there's a lot that the major firms can do. What myself and Russell and Edel all wanted was to go further into the crypto space, so the pure crypto as an asset space, and to work within more of a boutique environment where you're solely focused on that. And that's one of the advantages of being a specialist firm. You can focus purely on that topic that you're interested in.
Was it the innovation? Was it the technology? Was it the people in that space that attracted you?
It was specifically this opportunity at 21 Shares. I mean, 21 Shares is a company that I've looked at for a number of years. So while I was at Aberdeen, they were really the company that you saw leading the space within crypto ETPs, mainly because of their thought leadership, the research that they were publishing. And that's what really made it attractive to us, is it was this big brand, the leader within crypto ETPs and ETFs, and to take on a leadership position there, it was very attractive.
Yeah. Now, what excites you the most about this new chapter in your career?
Oof. I mean, what excites me about crypto is that, you know, having worked in a traditional asset management firm where you're serving large institutions, you see this, I would call it like a gap between what you can provide to the biggest institutions and the individuals or even the smaller institutional investors. So there is this gap in opportunities available to different sizes of investors based on their, you know, their constraints, the amount of money that they have. What I like about crypto is it kind of levels the playing field. I mean, crypto is first and foremost an investment in a nascent technology, which is blockchain, and it's available to everyone. So I think actually with cryptocurrency, you have this potential to narrow some of that wealth gap that's been created over the years. Of course, not everybody is in the space now, and part of that is that not everybody's comfortable, I don't know, opening a crypto account or managing their own wallet or whatever. And that's where ETFs and ETPs come into play. They're about kind of creating that more sort of equity of opportunity to make it easy for people to get access to this amazing technology.
Okay, Duncan, I recently read an article that you wrote back in last year, January 2024. It was titled, "I Like Blockchain, But I Hate Crypto." Now, you clearly articulated a distinction, even a strong aversion to cryptocurrencies, while, you know, being enthusiastic about the underlying technology. Now, as president of 21 Shares, a firm entirely focused on crypto assets, that's a quite a shift.
Definitely not a flip, but what that piece was supposed to be, it was almost a tongue-in-cheek kind of jab at the executives across most of financial services who dismissed cryptocurrency, but would constantly say that they love the idea of blockchain technology and the things that it can do within their business, which is great. But if you actually understand blockchain, public blockchain, you would know that the two come hand in hand. You cannot have one without the other. So cryptocurrency is the payment mechanism for the use of the underlying blockchain technology. So it's like the electricity that makes them run. And the point of that piece was really to say, you really need to look at this, you know, a bit closer if you're going to say you like blockchain, but you hate crypto. And that, by the way, is why we see cryptocurrency as an investment in technology, because the more blockchain adoption that goes on, the more demand there will be for the underlying native cryptocurrency to pay for that. And that's what makes it a good investment.
Mm. So is it fair to say that without digital assets, without Bitcoin and all these coins, there won't be that technology, the innovation that will spur?
Oh, yeah. 100%. I mean, look at the amount of innovation that's gone on in the last 10 to 15 years within the blockchain digital asset space. And blockchain has gone from being absolutely nothing to being either used or looked at being used across every major corporation in every sector. And that innovation, I don't believe would have happened within those firms. I do not believe that a bank is going to have would have come up with the idea of the payments or the use of blockchain and collateral management without somebody building it externally and wanting to be being incentivized to build it. And that's the incentivization comes through that cryptocurrency as well.
No, absolutely. Now, crypto, I found this, a crypto is seen by many investors as digital tulips. And for anyone listening and wondering what flowers got to do with crypto, it's interesting. I'm sure you know about it, but it's actually a reference to a 17th century tulip frenzy in Amsterdam that drove up tulip prices astronomically for a bit, and then it died down. So imagine you're sitting across a seasoned wealth manager who still views crypto as such. What's the one argument you'd make? And this argument not based on potential returns, but on fundamental shift in finance or technology that would make them reconsider their stance.
So what I would say is that the tulips didn't do a lot, right? And they were perishable. what I would say to this person is the companies and countries are constantly trying to grow. We're on this constant kind of we've got this constant desire to grow for greater productivity, and they think about it from the perspective of everything pie getting bigger. But there's a cost to that, and there's a limit to that. So the only way that we can have productivity growth is through efficiencies. That requires technological transformation within businesses. So I'm not just talking about financial services, I'm talking about all sectors again. And blockchain technology, without a doubt, is going to be the major transformational shift that these companies will see, or will drive the major transformational shift. AI is great. Yep. People are doing wonderful things with it, but AI itself will not be scalable without blockchain from a data provenance perspective, from a data management perspective. So what I would say is look at what companies need and the efficiency that they need, and then say, okay, what will be the effect of that? Well, that will mean more use of the blockchain. Again, that will mean more need for and demand for the underlying cryptocurrency to pay for use of it. And then it becomes far more clear that it's that's the real investment thesis.
Now, Duncan, there is a narrative of us versus them that sometimes emerges between traditional finance and crypto communities. Have you experienced that firsthand? And what do you believe are the biggest misunderstandings fueling this divide?
I've definitely experienced that. So when I started out, I remember I was at a big conference in Paris, and I was on a panel and, you know, on stage there with a kind of a bit of a legend from the crypto industry, and I was supposed to be there as the traditional finance person giving my view, and I feel like I was almost being, every time he spoke he would get cheered, and when I spoke it was almost a boo. So it definitely existed. People saw them as two different worlds. I would say that's completely changed now. There's been a massive convergence. I mean, you have traditional finance people regularly attending and speaking at the real native crypto events, and then you have cryptocurrency people coming to the traditional finance events, and I think you have a crossing over of talent as well within those two worlds. So they're definitely converging, and it makes sense. This is just part of the kind of the evolution of any kind of adoption of anything new, any technology. We had the early adopters, and then, you know, of course, the deniers, and this is just the way that new technology evolves. And I believe that everybody eventually will just see blockchain as just another piece of technology they use in their day-to-day life. In fact, ideally, they don't even see it. It's on in the background.
Yeah. Do you think there is fear or I guess hesitance to talk about cryptocurrencies or digital assets within that traditional finance, especially for investors talking about it in their wealth portfolios and things like that?
I think there certainly has been. I mean, you've just said it best in the question, right? You called them both cryptocurrencies and digital assets. When I started my career in hedge funds, and I can still remember the point where we changed the name of the business from hedge funds to liquid alternatives. And that was because hedge funds was almost a dirty word. And then we changed it back. Why? Because people realized that actually there was real value to this. And the same thing has happened within cryptocurrencies. Cryptocurrencies, a lot of people just called their units digital assets because it felt more mainstream, less controversial. They are the same thing. But I think that fear of talking about it and being almost like an outsider, looking like you're an outsider or at the tails is dissipating for sure. I actually think the big risk, the big fear that people have within the next few years, especially if you're an asset manager, is that you will be seen to be off benchmark if you don't have cryptocurrencies in your portfolio. And there's nothing an asset manager hates more than being off benchmark.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk about volatility in the crypto market that we saw since the US elections, you know, a few months back. It's interesting. I'm going to refer back to your article because it was an interesting read. And you've expressed concerns about the volatility of cryptocurrencies. But, you know, obviously 21 Shares firm that offers more than 40 cryptocurrency ETPs, and, you know, you've got more than $10 million in $10 billion in assets under management globally. Has that very volatility that you've once spoke about, or, you know, in your article, has now presented a tangible challenge in terms of that investor confidence that you're seeing?
I wouldn't say so. The investors that we have, so, you know, we have a mix of retail investors and institutional investors. In Europe, for example, that's probably about 50-50. In the US, it's predominantly retail. But all of them understand what they own. They understand what exposure they have, and that it is volatile. That volatility has come down a lot, though. I mean, you just look at Bitcoin. Bitcoin now has a volatility that's on par almost with equities. 2 years ago, it was twice that. So the volatility is coming down across cryptocurrencies as the asset class sees more adoption. There is a broader set of buyers, but we know what kind of business we have. We expect that kind of volatility in price, which has an impact on the assets that we manage, and we do have products that are set up to deal with that volatility as well. So, you know, for example, we have a Bitcoin and gold product, which combines the two assets and weights them based on their relative volatility. That's a completely different exposure. It's sort of the current and future store of value play, and so we have something for everyone, really.
Mm. So how are you navigating this in sense? How are you speaking to your clients when they see this volatility? Yeah. What kind of assurance?
Well, I mean the volatility goes both ways, and you know, as you said, after the Trump election, you know, we've seen a fair bit of it. We had that initial run up in prices. I think our research team did an excellent job of almost calling the top that we'd seen and flagging that the market was hot. But now post the sell-off and the more positive developments that we've seen with, for example, the new chair of the SEC, the US SEC coming on board, they're now seeing a great opportunity across a number of different assets, including Bitcoin, of course. It's kind of the proxy for the cryptocurrency world. But we just want to make sure that our investors are educated. We get what we've been told is the best research in the market out to them, the best education that we can provide to help them understand what's going on.
I guess it helps when Trump says that he wants to make the US the center of crypto.
It's helpful, but it can be noise, right? Like there was this expectation that when Trump was elected, there was an expectation from the market that the US government and the SEC were going to come out and be all kind of gung-ho with, you know, crypto bulls. Now, yes, Trump has made a few comments and there's been the meme coin, but we've not actually seen that from the SEC. Our expectation, and we think it's far more healthy for the market, is if we just have a more rational SEC in the US. We don't need them to be crypto bulls. We just need them to be rational, and that will then lead to a slower grind up in prices, which overall is better for us and our investors.
Mm. Now, if we talk about institutional adoption of crypto, it feels like it's a tipping point for many. What are some of the real world sort of conversations that you're having with institutions that indicate that sort of shift now? And what are the remaining sticking points?
Yeah, it's changed a lot. So when we would say, and you know, other groups would say, we have institutional investors, that predominantly meant hedge funds, some family offices and some wealth managers. That has changed. Of course, they are all still there. I mean, the hedge funds are a major client for us. I think we probably have, for the size of our business, the largest pool of hedge fund capital, because our products are so efficient, they're so cheap to trade. But the institutional investor base overall is changing. So we're now having conversations with pension funds, for example, with our large insurance firms as well. The differences in if there are sticking points, the differences are quite regional based on where they are. I mean, we are a global firm. We cover, just in Europe, a number of different European countries. The early adopters of those institutions are very sophisticated. I mean, they are investing well beyond Bitcoin and the other blue chip assets. The newer institutional investors are looking at Bitcoin first, as you should expect, and then are thinking about other areas like basket products, a more diversified exposure. Generally speaking, they will often look to, even if they are allowed to invest in the assets from a regulatory perspective, they will still look to the regulator for the tone that they have, you know, the UK is a perfect example. Professional investors are allowed to invest in cryptocurrency derivatives like ETPs or ETFs, but because the FCA has not shown itself to be fully supportive of that by having a ban for retail, I think that's kept a lot of institutional investors out. as well. And if you're an asset management company, let's say, like a buy side firm, why would you want your products available to as many investors as possible? So they need to be retail appropriate for the vast majority.
Yeah, and cost. You know, if we talk about cost wise, can you truly compete with the likes of, you know, iShares? Obviously, we recently saw WisdomTree. They've cut their fees on their flagship cryptocurrency product by 15 basis points, but that was in response to BlackRock sort of ETP debut. So
we chose not to. So our you know, we've been around the longest, right? So we've been around since 2018, and as a result, we have products that have different fee structures. With the blue chip ones, you know, the largest assets like the Bitcoins, the Ethereums, Solanas, we've also launched low cost versions as well for the new investors coming in. And so our product in Bitcoin, for example, you mentioned iShares, was already extremely competitive, not as low as these fee holidays that have been provided by others. But what I would say is investors should not just look at the sticker price. They should look at the total cost of owning something, which is more than the expense ratio, includes the spreads that you pay. When you add the spreads in, I think then people will see how competitive our products still are, even without a fee holiday. So I absolutely think that we can compete with the big names out there. And that's down to the fact that we have true crypto specialists in our business running research, running our capital markets division, that are able to get the best liquidity and the best spreads in the market.
If we look ahead, what's your vision for how wealth managers and asset managers will be interacting with the digital asset ecosystem in the next, say, 3 to 5 years? If you've got a crystal ball.
Whoa. You know what? I don't feel like I need a crystal ball for this. The changes are already happening. I mean, just to give an example, in private banks, historically, they've been an execution-only client of ours into our products. That means that their wealthy clients say, I want to buy the 21 shares XYZ ETP. And so they go and execute that trade for them. They have not advised their clients to do that. They've not been allowed to. That's changing. So many of the large private banks in Switzerland, for example, are now introducing this advisory model for cryptocurrency ETPs and ETFs. They're actually also including them in their discretionary portfolios. So we can see these things changing. We have had wealth managers in the UK also allocate, and across most of Europe. I think there's probably a couple of big changes that we need to see it reach full scale. And that would be very clearly in the UK, we need the FCA to drop or redefine the ban on crypto derivatives, which means I think I am fine stopping or restricting retail investors from, let's say, buying levered exposure on cryptocurrency. I mean, it's already volatile enough. They don't need levered exposure, but stopping them from investing in regulated vehicles that offer exposure is just bonkers to me. It basically forces them into unregulated venues to get their exposure. So I think we need to change for the UK in particular, we need to change from the FCA on that. And then we need ESMA to make cryptocurrencies an eligible investment for UCITS. If you have those two things, and ESMA's currently reviewing that, if you have those two things, there'll be nothing to stop buy-side asset management firms across all of Europe, UK and continental Europe, from starting to include the assets in their portfolios.
Yeah. If the next major financial crisis were to unfold, how do you believe digital assets would fare compared to traditional safe haven assets?
I think what we've seen so far is cryptocurrencies actually being surprisingly resilient during the periods of traditional kind of risk off, events. So risk assets, traditional risk assets selling off. I'd expect them to probably trade in line initially with those risk assets, but recover much, much quicker. It all depends on when the event happens. The beauty of cryptocurrencies is that they trade 24/7. That's also the downside to them, right? So they're the easiest thing for people to sell. If something happens at the weekend, they'll be the first thing that will be sold. But they're also usually the first thing to recover. And over the last few weeks, we've seen equities just have a horrible time. We've actually seen really strong performance from crypto, and I don't see why we wouldn't have that again in the future.
Mm. Now, you've navigated both the established world of Aberdeen and now the rapidly evolving crypto space with 21 Shares. What's been the most eye-opening or key insights that you've gained from both sides of the divide?
Oh, that's a tough one. I think that in the traditional world, I think it's you can feel like you're making progress and innovating and maybe fairly at some point you're a leader in the space, but if you don't keep moving at pace, you'll quickly be overtaken by others. So complacency can really be can be a killer. And actually that's a lesson that in the crypto space, which is mostly got startups, they already know this, right? They have to constantly adapt and move at pace. And I see exactly that with 21 Shares. And then in the crypto world, honestly, I'm like, I've not had any big life lessons yet. But maybe what I'll say is the way that you present yourself to the market, especially when ETFs, when you're so disconnected from the end investor, actually, because of the way that they invest, the way that you engage with investors really, really matters. The brand that you have, the brand that you're trying to either build or retain, will be determined by how you engage with investors during great times and really difficult times as well.
Duncan, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for joining me today at Citywire in London.
Thank you, Nir.
Today is VE Day. The boys
the newly crowned queen waves from the Belt.
Eagle has landed. Apollo 11 has
tearing
landed.
Down the Berlin Wall.
Since 1929, the Monks Investment Trust's mission has been to help investors grow their wealth. We aim to do this today by taking a three-dimensional approach to growth. Cyclical growth, rapid growth, and steady growth.
The World Wide Web.
And Wall Street is in turmoil as stocks crash.
The Monks Investment Trust, managed by Baillie Gifford. Capital at risk.